This is the Books and Authors Fantasy Podcast, episode 80. Good day and welcome to this episode of the Books and Authors Fantasy Podcast. I'm your host, podcaster, and author of Fun Fantasy Reads, Jamie Davis. This podcast is exactly what we say it is each week, folks. It's a show we have here focused on authors of great fantasy books, whether it's epic fantasy or urban fantasy. We do grimdark, swords and sorcery, space fantasy, you name it, we cover it here on the show and try to bring you the best and brightest authors from all the various corners of the fantasy book world. Kicking off this week's episode, like we usually do, I'd like to bring you my personal author update. I'm working on getting the word out about my brand new book, Huntress Initiate, which came out earlier this week. It's been a long time coming, a lot of work gone into this book, and it's the first book in a brand new series called the Huntress Clan Saga, and I hope you will check it out. It's available on Amazon and in Kindle Unlimited. So you definitely want to look that up. I think it's just a kick-ass urban fantasy book, and I really enjoyed writing it. As always, if you want to find out more about what I'm up to and what people I'm working with and chatting with are up to, visit my fan group on Facebook, Jamie's Fun Fantasy Readers, or you can check out what's going on my website and blog at jamiedavisbooks.com. I look forward to hearing from you. There's a contact form over there, so always feel free to reach out if you have a question, a comment, or just want to share something with me. I love hearing from folks. On today's show, we interviewed Daryl J. Ball. Daryl writes fantasy books from his home in Ontario, Canada, and his series, The Barrier of Mbekel, represents a vast story and world with a fascinating character seeking revenge against the father he thinks wronged him. We talk about that story, the basis behind it, and the character development and more on this episode, so check out my chat with Daryl coming up next. Daryl, it's great to have you here on the Books and Authors Fantasy Podcast. Welcome to the show.
Thanks, Jamie. Glad to be here.
Yeah, so why don't you tell us a little bit about yourself, maybe give us some insight into your background, and introduce yourself to our readers in the audience.
Certainly. I grew up in southwestern Ontario in the beautiful country of Canada. I started writing at a really young age, and then I got a rather harsh critique in grade 9 in high school, and I stopped writing. I put it aside, even though I loved it. And then when my grandfather passed on, falling about with Alzheimer's disease, I decided to go with his thing where he used to always tell me to make sure I'm living, not just being. So I went back into writing at some of the suggestion, and from there I haven't stopped. So that's the start of the writing. Other than that, I'm basically just around my family a lot, and I'm always around a cat of some kind.
Cat of, I'm picturing like pumas and stuff.
No. Just regular house cat.
Okay.
There's usually at least one of them around me.
That's great.
In case you hear some random meowing.
No, that's okay. Because, I mean, I usually den our dogs, but my wife's working from home today, so they're all sitting up with her. And I know that, you know, if the UPS guy comes to the door, they'll be barking like crazy animals, and we'll have to cut that out. So it happens. I got a chance to start reading your book, and I'm really enjoying it so far. The whole concept of this barrier of, is it Mbekel?
Mbekel,
okay.
Mbekel, yeah.
Mbekel, great.
Not the first person I've had to pronounce it for.
Well, no, that's okay. I mean, it's one of those things.
It's always interpretation.
Fantasy authors, we run into that all the time, right? We try to come up with clever names and stuff. And I have some of my books in audio, and I'm constantly having to do like pronunciation guides and things like that, where I like record myself saying the words, because otherwise the narrator has no idea what I'm talking about.
I have been tempted so many times to put a pronunciation guide in the back of books, and I'm like, but by the time I get to the end of the book to get to it, it's too late.
Yeah, I agree. Although sometimes people like that, you know, there's some purists out there that really enjoy, I think, making sure they're pronouncing things the way that the author envisions them to be pronounced. Because I've seen that happen where an audiobook comes out, you know, years after a series is started, and, you know, there's uproar from the fans who say that the narrator's not pronouncing it correctly.
Right. Well, that's one of the reasons I made sure with any of the main character names in the series, the Barry and Beckel, I made sure they were easily shortened so that their shortened name is much easier to pronounce.
Like Carr.
Yeah, much easier than Carantu.
Right, right.
Just so you know how that's pronounced.
Well, that's good to know, too. So yeah. Let's talk a little bit about Carr, because it's like this magical fantasy realm that you know, has all the fantasy races, and they are basically, they've walled themselves off from the humans so that they can, well, like, not,
yeah, they,
not
they
have
do it more. They've walled the humans off, but or, either or.
Well, they've built
the
wall between
the territory.
Them. Yeah. And that wall is causing some issues, and Carr is the main character is, if I understand correctly, half human, half elf. He was actually
right.
a product of a wartime,
yeah.
You know, tryst,
and as a result,
whatever.
He has a very, he's one of those cases where, because he's raised by people in the aftermath of that war who resent the humans' invasion, they treat Carr very much like a second-class citizen. His teachers basically, if he shows any trouble whatsoever in the class, are like, okay, we did our best. And they basically throw their hands up and basically stop trying. So he's had to learn a lot of stuff on his own. And as a result, he becomes very much a self-taught person by reading, mostly. Because that's one place people don't bother him, is in the library. And so when the story starts, he's basically, it's his first time actually leaving home and actually experiencing life away from this protective womb he's sort of been in. As abusive as it was, he's experiencing everything, like all that stuff he read, he's experiencing it now. And so throughout the course of the series, he goes through a lot of personal change as his beliefs and everything are challenged. And he starts realizing, wait a minute, why do I believe this stuff? I don't know if you got to that point yet. He encounters dwarves.
Oh, and I haven't gotten there yet.
Yeah, he encounters dwarves. This is one of the smaller ones I can talk about. He encounters dwarves, and the elves and dwarves don't get along at all. Now, he realizes, wait, he's grown up not liking dwarves. But once he encounters me, he actually comes to that realization, they're okay, and why should I have the same dislike for dwarves that the elves do when the elves don't like me either? So it's sort of one of those things where he has to think about, well, why do I not like them? I have no reason not to. And so he's kind of got to shift away from the elf way of thinking and sort of figure his own value system, as it were.
And that's,
so he goes through a lot of that.
You know, no, and that's you know, it's an interesting look at how, you know, that hero's journey, where they start with one set of preconceived notions of the world and understanding of how things are supposed to be. And part of the journey is not just the physical journey of traveling through geography, but also that learning that takes place with all of us as we travel through life to have a better understanding of what's really going on from our simplistic childhood view of things.
Well, yeah, his whole goal at the start of the series is what pushes him through the whole thing, but there's always these things that where he can't not get involved in certain things. And so he gets around those things, and that lends itself to him learning more and makes things more challenging for him down the line as well, because now he's got more things to think about. But he still wants to go ahead with everything, but just everything else gets in the way.
Right, yeah.
He has to sort of think over what is his real motivation. So I'm trying to give any spoilers there too much.
No, I understand that completely. It's one of the challenges we have on this show is trying not to give away too much. But
I will say this. He does start to develop his own sort of sense of his own family. Not the family he was born into, but his own family that he develops for himself that stays more connected to because of shared experiences and upbringing and what he's gone through himself. So,
wow.
I think that's what we all go through in life as well. We have the family we're born, but we also have that group of friends who we sort of are closer to, who become the family we've chosen. So I'd like to explore that a little bit.
Yeah, and I like that you do that, because I think that it helps us. It's funny how we authors try to kind of, without doing it overtly, but kind of through the shared experience of reading about the main character or any of the characters going through and having these types of realizations, we can draw those inferences back to our own lives. And sometimes it can be a catalyst for some change in thought processes and re-examining of our own value systems.
Right. All my books do that to some degree. Is that's where the story for me starts when I'm planning it, is what is the character going to be like and how do they get to that point mentally and physically, and showing the growth along the way. And allows me to explore all those things.
Do you find that you start with character first, or do you have like a story idea in your head and then you build a character into it?
I start with the character, and then literally that's what I do. I start with the character. I'm thinking, this is the character I want to have at the end of everything. How did I get there? And then I just work my way backwards and then double story.
Interesting. So you start at the end and work your way backwards. You know, a lot of people might have an end in mind, but they also have the beginning in mind, and it's the middle that they work out. That they have a beginning and an end a lot of times. I've talked to a lot. I do that a lot. I'll have like the climactic scene like pretty much spelled out in my head. I know what's going to happen. And I know where people start. It's the how do I get from point A to point Z that is the writing of the book for me.
Oh, yeah. And that's where I run to a bit of a challenge with the series is as I said, I know the end, and then I figure out the beginning, so I know where to start. In the middle, I have a rough idea where it's going to go, but sometimes things come up that I didn't plan on, and that leads to subplots and more things to be explored that changes how direct a line it's going to be to the end. And sometimes it throws in some really fun wrinkles I feel like exploring. So,
oh, definitely. I think that's the fun of writing. At least it is for me.
Yeah. Like literally, book two of the Barry McBeckel was never planned. It was originally goes book one, and then book three would be the next book. Was originally what was planned in rough, and then something came up at the end of book one, and I thought, I should explore that bit better, and then it became this whole hugely developed idea, and that became the second book. So I had to sort of insert it and then fix book three to carry on from it.
And book two just came out last August, this past August, 2019.
Yeah, end of August, beginning of September.
Yeah, great. That's exciting. And so what are your thoughts about book three coming out? Are you looking to have it come out about the same time next year?
It should be out about February.
February, awesome. So folks can look forward to that coming up if they start the series.
I'm just in the process of finishing book four.
Oh, wow.
I'm trying to get a little bit faster at it.
No, you know, it's funny. As authors, the hardest book to write is, I think, for a lot of people, book one. And it takes sometimes years to get book one out of them.
Right.
And then the next book is, you know, not years, but maybe, you know, 6 to 12 months. And then the next book is a little bit faster. And as the ideas start to flow, I think creativity is a muscle that needs to be developed and worked just like anything else.
Mm-hmm. Well, see, I had originally written book one when it came out. Then I was going to do a book in between, which is The Name of the Bear, and then book two, and then dive fully into the series. Well, The Name of the Bear took longer than planned to refine to where it needed to be. And so that kept putting off book two. And then I got to being a year later from the release of book one. And I was just like, people have probably lost interest in this. I don't have anything else for this series yet. How's book two doing? I'm checking to see, okay, what's the earliest book two can come out now within reason. And I was putting a lot of pressure on myself because I was also trying to get The Name of the Bear finished. So it just worked out. They were really close together coming out. And as a result, because of all that, book three was also ended up being almost not done as well.
Yeah. And so you said you got book four kind of worked through at this point, almost finished.
Yep.
How many books are you looking at in this? Is it four books? Is it going to be more than that? Or are you leaving it kind of open-ended?
It was planned to be six. it's looking like it's going to go a bit past that, just because of some subplot stuff. I'm ideally hoping for 7 at the most, but unless it depends how busy book 5 gets.
So you, the two books are Son of No One and Honor Lost. Yep. And, they follow Carr as he continues to his quest to cross the barrier.
Yes.
To the human side. And you spell it out in the description on book one, is that his ultimate goal is to find his human father and kill him for bringing him into the world.
Motivation for a hero.
Yeah.
It's very much, he's very straightforward. He basically has grown up literally blaming his human father for every little slight he grew up with. And he's like, if my father had been human, life would have been better. And I don't know if it's come up in the book yet, but basically anybody else who's a hybrid like him, half human, half elf, has been basically put to death as soon as discovered. And it's only by pure luck that his village has sort of not done that to him. And so he's supposed to be grateful for that this whole time when he's growing up. So he sort of knows his days are numbered. The moment he leaves home, he knows that the greater elf community will become aware of him, and then he's as good as dead. So he's got that on his back, but it's sort of like, if I'm going to die anyway, I want to achieve this one thing and get revenge on the guy who did this.
Wow.
So he very much focuses all his blame on him.
It's dark, but it's also, I think, a great way to explore, you know, motivation in a character and exactly what drives them and how they're changing systems of values and beliefs can affect their drive to do something like that.
There is a big wrinkle in book 2, in Honor Lost, that sort of affects things going forward for him a bit. Not a lot, but it's changes sort of things in his mind where he's sort of got this, he's sort of half thinking about it all the time now, and it sort of challenges a few things for him. And he explores that a little bit more in book 3, and he's very much still very focused on his quest, but there's been some things that he's learned that have very much challenged what he thought he knew about the world. Basically everything.
Yeah.
I figured, why not? It's 2 books, and I may as well throw his world upside down.
Yeah, well, no, and you've got a lot, and it sounds like you've got a lot of time with the future follow-up books to kind of resettle things and reset things the way that it's maybe meant to be, or what he thinks it should be. So I'm looking forward to that. I think the readers will enjoy that, too. You mentioned Name of the Bear, and that just came out at the beginning of this month, so I wanted to talk about that.
The Name of the Bear was resulted from me taking an online quiz. I took this online quiz, which was to find out your Gaelic name or whatever, and it came up with this really super long name. And I was talking to another author, and we were joking about how do we pronounce this, and I can make a comedy out of it where you get the best of warriors in a fight. When they stumble over something trying to say his name, he takes advantage of that. Instead, it became this very dark story where the whole book ends up sort of being this warrior who kills a bear, something you really can't do single-handedly, but he manages, and he knows it's not supposed to be possible, so he thanks the bear for its sacrifice, because that's sort of a setting for him. And he is suddenly talked to by a spirit, which he thinks is the bear's spirit, and it offers to guide him in sort of achieving all of his dreams that he has and making things better for him and his village and everybody around him. So, of course, he takes that advice. Like, who doesn't want that, you know, great wish to make everything better? There are a lot of challenges to come along the way for him doing that, with people he thought he could trust sort of turning on him and people he didn't know he could trust sort of becoming allies. Just a lot of growth for everybody involved, but at the same time, there's always sort of the question of, is this spirit really trustworthy? And when you get down to it, looking at how everything goes in the story and the way his relationship with the spirit works and how it affects his life, I realized when I was writing it around the climax that the whole thing really functions as sort of an analogy for the journey of depression, where you're slowly, your vision slowly gets skewed of how you view the world and how your friendships and relationships get affected by it. So it was an interesting way to look at it and develop from there. And it became a very long, dark book that had working on it, did a number on me health-wise.
Really? In what way?
Because of what is involved, when I was on my second or third revision, there are certain scenes that are so I'm so attached to, the revising, it ended up causing me a great deal of anxiety to the point where I thought I was having a heart attack. And so I got to get checked for that. It turns out I'm in great health. So there's that benefit.
Well, that's a plus.
Yeah. Ta-da! You're in great health. I got to work on that stressing yourself out thing. But it was certain things were so, give me so much anxiousness because I do understand the journey of depression because I do suffer from it a great deal, but I've got mostly under wraps most of the time. And so I very much connected to the character to the point where everything he was going through, I was like, I was feeling it. And I'm hoping that comes across to readers, how real it feels. That's the hope. But it was an adventure. It's probably the longest thing I will ever write. I say that, you know, knock on wood. We all know that will not be the case. Because as writers, we always end up writing something again later.
You know, it's interesting you talked about how the physical effect of writing the book had on you. One of my favorite series from years back was Piers Anthony's Incarnations of Immortality.
Fantastic series.
And if you read the author notes at the end of them, he talks about, you know, he's basically dealing with the incarnations of the classical immortals, the death and Father Time and Mother Nature he writes about in the author note at the end of each of the books how those specific incarnations seem to have manifested in a specific way as he was writing about them each and in a significant manner in his life. You know, death happened in his life and while he was riding on a pale horse and forth and so on. And it's fascinating.
One of the first fantasy books I read.
Yeah.
Piers Anthony got me sort of into fantasy.
Yeah, it's just interesting to see. I mean, I think people don't realize as authors, we pour a lot of ourselves into our books.
Well, you have to. And I know that the whole thing is people say, write what you know. Well, you can't know fantasy stuff, personally, but you can know what it feels like in certain situations. And I think that's where that comes across.
Well, and I think, you know, sometimes people are like, well, you know, why are humans always present? You know, it's always human type people, bipedal, you know, two arms, two legs kind of thing, represented in fantasy and science fiction stories. It's because if we were to be too bizarre and too separated from our understanding of reality, the readers would have nothing to connect with. You know, the readers have to have some sort of character development and character traits to identify with, in the bad, even in the, you know, the evil characters that they can understand and relate to what's going on in the story.
Well, absolutely. The best villains are people you can sort of have a connection to because you sort of get where they're coming from, even though you would never go that far yourself, but you want to at least understand them.
Yeah, the villains think they're the good guys, you know? I mean, a really good villain is a villain who really honestly believes they're doing things for the right reasons. You know, the guy who, Thanos in the Marvel universe, he was getting rid of half of the living creatures in the universe because of the drain of resources they were causing.
And even though it's a short-term solution, really, because the population grows very quickly, but he believed it because of his own experiences.
Yeah.
And he saw that as the perfect answer, no matter what it cost him or anybody else. He was willing to sacrifice himself for that cause.
and sacrifice the things he loved. And we're not going to, I shouldn't worry about Marvel spoilers at this point. If you haven't seen them yet, you know, it's on you.
You're a bit behind.
But
I mean, it's pretty easy when there's about 30 movies to go. Sorry. What is that officially? Like 23 now?
Yeah, I think so. Something like that. Yeah.
23 after the last Spider-Man movie.
Yeah, I think so.
They're all great.
No, I completely agree. And, you know, it's a great example of bringing, having a broader universe in your story writing and, mm-hmm. and having very different and disparate characters that can come together in a shared universe like that and have very different story arcs coincide. I mean, Guardians of the Galaxy, you know, having to shift between that like happy-go-lucky kind of, you know, almost goofy sense of like understanding of the world and the universe and how it works. And then you have the very serious, you know, Iron Man, heavy pathos and stuff that's going on with him. And, you know, it's just interesting to see.
Every one of the movies supports sort of a different genre as well.
Right.
And it shows that the world is greater. And you try to explore that as an author as well. You want to, like in fantasy especially, you want to present things as if there is other things going on at the same time as your story in that world. But you don't want to give too much information about it because other people want to know more about that. But you want to show that it is a world that is lived in, that other characters are busy except when your hero isn't around.
Definitely. So you've got book three coming out in February. What's the title of that going to be? Have you figured that out yet?
Oh, I figured that out a while ago. book three is called Amplification.
So we'll be looking for Amplification coming out in February in the book three in the Barrier of Mbekel. Yep, series. And that's going to be exciting to kind of pick up on. People can pick up Son of No One now. And they can also check out The Name of the Bear, too, if they are so inclined.
And if you're really bored, check out The Tanis Project.
Now, what's that about?
That was, that gets into our antagonist thing. Tanis is a vampire, and he sees himself as he's always done the right thing. He wants to learn. He basically goes about things in a very bad way, but he doesn't apologize for it. So it became this sort of, it's just an online blog he did where each chapter is basically a journal entry where he just talks about whatever he feels like that day, but result in anecdotal stories about his life and experiences. Sometimes he talks about his background. Sometimes he talks about, say, what he thinks of Christmas.
That's a fascinating device to expose a character's inner thoughts and processes.
Because he talks about his life over the course of about 200 years, and because the stories are anecdotal, some of the stuff he touches on in bits are things I'm going to explore in full-size books later on. But sort of it's like a snapshot of this world.
Awesome.
Occasional peek into it.
So. That's intriguing. That really sounds pretty fascinating to me. I like that concept of, you know, the bits and pieces of a person's life, and at the end you kind of had to have at least a more full picture than you had in the beginning or from any single snapshot.
Right.
Excellent. Well, Daryl, you know, you and I could probably talk about this stuff for an extended period of time, but we've only got a half hour for the show. So
easily.
Yeah. I do appreciate you coming on the Books and Authors Fantasy Podcast. And I wish you best of luck on the coming launch in February and all your book projects. You really sound like you got a good handle on how a story is constructed and exciting and really intricate types of character development going on, which I think a lot of people really appreciate.
Thank you.
We'd love to have you back at some point in the future. So, reach out to us and we can get you back in here. But in the meantime, I want to thank you for being on the show.
Thank you for having me, Jamie. It's been a pleasure.
That will wrap up this episode of the Books and Authors Fantasy Podcast. Make sure you catch up with us for a whole lot more from the fantasy-focused community, both on Facebook and over at fantasy-focus.com. Leave a comment on this episode and let me know what's on your mind. Also on the website and on each podcast episode post, you'll find links to subscribe to the show on your favorite mobile app for iOS, Android, or even by email. So make sure you do that so you don't miss any of our episodes. And that's important because we've got some pretty cool authors coming up already scheduled in the coming months into the new year. The next episode, we actually have the amazing Jeffrey Kohanek on the show. He's returning. He was on back in June 2019. And he came back on because he just released an amazing first two books in his epic fantasy series, brand new series he's putting out. And I definitely wanted to talk to him about that one. They're getting a lot of good buzz, and it's exciting to hear what he's got to say. That's it for this episode of the Books and Authors Fantasy Podcast, though. So, as always, I'm your host, Jamie Davis. I like to think I write fun fantasy reads. I hope you think so, too. Don't forget to follow me over on Facebook. I have my Facebook group, Jamie's Fun Fantasy Readers, or my website, jamiedavisbooks.com, where if you want to sign up for my newsletter and get updates from me directly, I'm happy to share a book with you, a copy of my free ebook. Check it out. Whatever you do, though, you want to make sure you subscribe and come back here for our next podcast and continue to get all the podcasts from this show. And you can do that. Also, don't forget, folks, I tell you this every week, and it's important because we miss things that are going on. So keep your eyes open. There's magic all around you.